morning. What did you just see there? You know, ask yourself that question. I know what you didn't see. You didn't see an ad for 241 Kids or anything like that. Okay? What I saw in that was a person at their moment of weakness gain a greater strength. And that's where we're going to go today. That's what we're going to talk about today. So let's pray. God, just come to you today, just thank you for this opportunity, just again to share just the power that you have and just how you use that and how you work, because that's what you do. Just pray that you would just guide my words and you would help people to be receptive or just to listen to what it is that you have to offer through me. It's in Christ's name. Amen. Well, last year, it was about this time last year, I was up here talking to you during our virus series. I was telling you about this virus that I had called fear. And I remember leaving that weekend just feeling a number of different things. And the first thing was just relief, you know? Just, man, I am glad that's over. You know, and then I had a feeling of just, you know, really kind of connecting the dots, understanding why this happened and this happened and this happened. But the last thing that I was left with was just this sense of anxiety, because it was like I knew that at that point I had to go on another journey to learn something about myself. So today, I would like nothing more than to stand up here and just to be all vague and not reveal anything to you today, and how we say right here, not go beneath the veneer, right? But I know that wouldn't be any fun. Right, so we won't do that. But to kind of get us going down this road, I just want you to think about something. I want you to think about your favorite movie. Think about that movie that every time it comes on, you watch it, you have it in your DVD collection. If AFI runs a special and they say that your movie's not on that list, and you email them and you say, I was robbed, you know, that movie that you just love, you know every line by heart. So you think about that movie, what character in that movie do you really identify with? Who's that person in that movie that has those traits and attributes that you really aspire to become? You wake up in the morning, you look in the mirror, and you say, I am that person. I want to be that person. Well, for me, top two movies on my list have got to be Braveheart and Gladiator. Are you surprised? I don't know. It's something about those characters. You know, William Wallace and who's that other guy in Gladiator? Maximus. Yeah, that's right. I knew the ladies would know that one, too. Those two characters are the strong men in the story. They're the heroes of the story. You know, every story has a hero. Every story has a hero that can hear that faintest cry. They're doing their daily thing, and all of a sudden they get that sense that someone, something, somewhere out there needs my assistance. Someone on the ground is saying, if only that person were here, then everything would be okay. So that hero swoops in, drives in, flies in, rides in, whatever their mode of transportation would be. They would come in, they would know just what to do, they would have all the answers, and they would fix things. Because that's what a hero does. A hero fixes things. They make things better. But there's this other person. There's this other person who seems to have all the answers. You want to have kids in here? Kids, nieces, nephews, few hands up here. You might know this person. The others will get to know her pretty soon. This little girl has a knack for getting ice cream trucks unstuck, for helping her friend Benny the Bull change from a potato back into a bull, or helping her best friend Boots go see his dad on his special day. Some of you know who I'm talking about. Dora. Dora, Dora, Dora the Explorer. But think about it. Think about it. If you know Dora, you know that she has all the answers in her backpack, and she has a map. She has a map that tells her where she needs to go. And as she and her best friend Boots are on their journey to wherever they're going, their next adventure, there's this one sneaky little person who's lurking around the corner, waiting to take Swiper. Swiper's trying to swipe something. Swiper's trying to take something from Dora, something that she needs. Sometimes he gets it, sometimes he takes it away. But Dora needs our help. She needs our help to look out for Swiper. She needs our help to let her know where Swiper is. Help me out with this. And what does she have to say to stop Swiper? Oh, man. Swiper knows Swipey. Yes, yes. Even Dora doesn't have all the answers. She needs our help, too. See, and for me, I've always been that person, that person who is rewarded for their strength. That person who was the go-to person, that person who's the answer man. You know, this looks like a job for Super Me. You know, go here, travel there. We need you over here. Something suddenly came up. We need you to take that off your plate. No, better yet, keep that on your plate. Add this to your plate, too. You know, I can carry this whole team on my back. And this was an expectation that I created that I had to fulfill. That expectation that I could do that. And I could be that for whoever. And I see that happening time and time again with feats of strength. For me, in the Russell House, feats of strength takes on a whole new meaning. It happens every time I go to the grocery. And going to the grocery is one of my habits. It's one of my habits and hobbies that I have. Not ashamed to admit it. It's a good thing, and my favorite grocery so far is the new Biggs and Hyde Park. So it's a shameless plug, and I'm not getting an endorsement deal from that, unfortunately. But here I am. I go to the grocery. Picture this. I'm at the grocery, and I've got my cart, and I'm going through the aisles, finding everything I need. Cart's piling up. You know, I get to the checkout line, preferably one that bags, and I go, and I put my things on the belt, you know, boxes, frozen food, dairy products, canned goods. You got to separate everything. And so the cashier says, do you have any coupons? Of course I have coupons. So I give her my coupons. And I'm listening to the beeps. I'm watching the little display. Just make sure I'm not overcharged because that can't happen. Okay? So I'm watching everything. They're bagging my groceries. I get them out to the car. And I'm in the car. Start it up. iPod's going. Listening. By nodding my head, I'm thinking about the whole way home. How do I get all those groceries into my house in one trip? Because that's what you have to do with feats of strength. It's one trip, okay? So I'm driving, I'm nodding. Closer I get to the house, I pick up the phone, call my wife, Kelly. Kelly, it's time for feats of strength. Translation, she knows what that means. Get the kids out of the way. Open the door, and you get out of the way, too, okay? And so I'm driving home, and I get home. open the door. So here's the process of feats of strength. You got to get every bag out. I'm going to try. So heavy bags go toward the elbows. Gives you better leverage, okay? So you slide them up. All the perishables, you know, the light things, the bread, the fruit, the eggs, the things that might get bruised go on the fingertips. Gives you better control. It really does. And so you got to leave room for the paper towels and toilet paper, too, underneath your arms. And so here I am in front of my house, feats of street. I got bags all over me, and I'm making sure not to drop anything, and I'm walking, and I'm thinking, are the neighbors watching me? Can the neighbors see me? Do they see me feats of strength? Are they saying, honey, why can't you be like that? Why can't you carry all the groceries in the house in one try? David's so strong, you know? And so I'm walking, and veins are popping out of my neck, and I'm like, I can't drop anything. Oh, I'm losing my toilet paper. Oh, my gosh. So here's Kelly. She's at the door. She opens it up. Do you need any help? No, I got this. And don't worry. I got this. I can do this by myself. Feats of strength. And so when I had to think about what is that verse that has had such a special effect on me, I was just drawn to this letter, this passage that came out of the New Testament. It comes out of 2 Corinthians, and it's a letter that Paul wrote to the people in the church in Corinth. Just a little bit of quick background on Paul. Paul used to be named Saul, who his hobby used to be killing other Christians. Okay? So, but at this point, he's a changed man. He's a changed man. His letter is telling people this, and he's saying, you know, that was the old me. This is the new me. I'm legit. I'm a follower of Christ, and, you know, believe me when I say this. And he says that God has given him this thorn. God has given him this, has made him keenly aware of how imperfect he is. And he's asked God to take this thorn, this thing away from him, not once, not twice, but three times. And we pick this up with God's response to Paul. He says, "But he said to me," he being God, "my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in your weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest in me." And Paul was telling us here, he says, strength, as we think of it, is not what we should be pursuing. That should not be the goal, that man-made strength. And God was saying, you know, Paul, I am God. I can do anything. I could take away that thorn out of your life. I could make your life perfect. But I got a better idea. See, what God does is he tends to use that thing that he's placed into your life as an opportunity to do his work, for him to fill that void. He's saying that he is all we need. When I put the stress and pressure on myself to be that super guy, that super David, God has a way of reminding me of just how imperfect I am and a way to get my attention. And he does this by giving me this little thing that we'll call a migraine. I know it's sad. But this type of migraine, it just drops me to my knees. I am helpless when I get it. I don't know when it'll strike, but I know that 9 times out of 10, I'll land in somebody's ER. Okay? And, you know, it could happen anytime. It could happen anywhere. It could happen as I'm speaking to 5,000 plus people this weekend. You know, a little stress and pressure with that. I can tell you that it has happened when I've been in meetings with clients at work. You know, and let me tell you about this migraine. It comes fully equipped. It's not your base model, if there is such a thing. You know, let's talk about, starts off with some blurred vision, seeing stars. I get this swollen tongue, start slurring my speech. I get the little numbness in my fingertips that leads to numbness over one side of my body. I get the whole nausea thing too. I'm telling you, it just cripples me. It cripples me. I remember one time I was traveling on business. I was in Park City, Utah. Snow on the ground, skiing, didn't have a care in the world. And I saw this same place that I visited back when the Winter Olympics were held in Park City a few years back. And Today Show did a broadcast from there. I think the resort was called The Canyon, I believe. Well, my experience at The Canyon was not so much a restful experience. If you ever go back there, you might want to watch out for one of the elevators there, because that nausea thing that I was talking about, yeah, that kind of happened in one of those elevators there. Yeah, yeah, so it can happen anywhere. It happened when I was getting ready to go to a friend's bachelor party. It happened during Crazy Campaign. And it's something that just brings me to my knees and just reminds me of just how imperfect I am and how much I can't do these things by myself. And it's something that I still try to struggle with. And when I'm at that ER, the only thing, you know, that they give me a cocktail of Stadol and Fenugreek, and that just takes the pain away only until the next time that it comes. And in my story, where I'm the hero, God has used things like this. You know, he's used my strength to remind me of just how weak I am. And every time I think I've taken a step in the right direction, turned the corner, jumped the hurdle, you know, I'm just reminded of just how imperfect I am. I got something in the mail that some of you might have gotten too this week. I don't know if you might have, but if you're a part of what's going on here at Crossroads and you know, you give back to how God is working in your life and in this church, then you might contribute to the ministries here. This is a contribution statement that Crossroads sends out that just lists how much you contribute. And a part of this is the Crazy Campaign that's on here. For those of you who might not be aware of what Crazy Campaign is, that was a spiritual journey that we as a church and individually took about a year ago. We just went through the process of putting everything that we had on the table, all of our stuff, and say, God, here it is. What do you want? Whatever you want, I will give it. Okay? So we're at this crazy campaign story that I have is one that some might say, man, come on. Surely that didn't happen. But it's true. So we were at the crazy commitment, the commitment capstone event at the Centos Center. Kelly and I had just, you know, we had gone through the process literally of writing everything that we had on an index card and putting it on our dining room table and just going through the process of this, we give this away. No, I can't give that away. Do you want to give that away? No, I can't give that away. Just that back and forth. And we finally landed on a figure. Felt pretty good about it. Knew it was going to be a stretch, but you know what? I'm okay. And so we're there. We're walking down the aisle with the putting our commitment in the box. We walk back, emotional experience, get back, and as I'm walking, I get this funny feeling comes over me. Not quite sure what it is, what it means. But we get back to our seats. I look at Kelly, and she's got tears in her eyes, and I'm like, okay, are those good tears or are those sad tears? Okay, let's go through that. And so in our exchange, we get to the point to where, you know, God was talking to both of us individually, but about the same thing. And what he wanted us to see, he was like, yeah, thanks for playing. You made your commitment. That's great and everything. Thanks for going through the journey. But I want you to go back and recommit. And the next time you commit, I want you to increase what you wrote down the first time. Okay, you can do that. But one thing about me, I'm a little bit of a control freak when it comes to money. Okay, so I'd already crunched the numbers. I'd already been home and crunched the numbers. We can do this. It's not a problem. You know, and I just, you know, Kelly was working part-time. I was in this crazy place with my job. We had a new kid. I just had these visions of me just being broke. And I have broke baggage. I have baggage about being broke. You know, don't want to be broke. Never have been broke. Don't want to go back. Thanks for playing. Bought the T-shirt, and that's great. And the idea of that just drives me crazy. And I was trying to put my finger in it. Where did that come from? And it might have come from just a wild guess. When I graduated from high school, you know how you get, you know, cards and money and congratulations and everything. I had this nice little pool of money built up. And, you know, one of my parents, who shall remain nameless, said, David, why don't you let me hold that money for you? You know, let me hold that money for you. I said, sweet. Who needs a bank when I've got my mom? And so, you know, felt great, days passed, and I, you know what, I had my sights set on this Honda scooter. I was going to college, I just saw myself just being the man driving down campus with this Honda scooter with an extra seat for the ladies, you know. And so I just knew I was going to get that. I just knew. So I said, Mom, thanks for holding my money. I need some of my money that you were holding for me. You know, I want to buy this thing. And she said, no. She said, I'm going to keep that money because you owe that to me. I'm like, what? So where was Dora when my mommy was swiping my money? Where was she at? You know, and I had to think about that. I think that's where my control issue with money started happening. You know, have a hard time giving it. I still kind of struggle with that. You know, it creates a little bit of conflict at my house because Kelly and I, we look at money just a little bit differently. You know, but in that moment at the Centos Center, I just really felt God was bringing me to a place of being dependent on Him when it came to that, giving up that control issues and really just leaning more on Him. And it's really caused me to do that more. It has put me in the fetal position a few times with the crazy campaign. You know, but I'm working through that. I'm getting better. If we look back in Paul's letter, just to dissect that a little bit more, you know, God told him, he said that my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. See, and I'm learning to seek that. I'm learning to seek that power that God is telling us that he has available for us instead of God forcing that power on me, which he has done and which he will do. And to do that, I've got to give up. I've got to give it up to God. And there's a quote that we'll take a look at here that says, man has grossly underestimated the power of God and has grossly overestimated his own. See, the idea of trying to fix everything and be strong for everyone is just false. It's false, and it will never get you any closer to God. It'll never get you any more of God, which is really where true life lies. This whole idea of giving up, I've put that into practice. I've done that. I did that with a really good friend of mine. Really good friend of mine. We go as far back as you can go back. And for about a two-year-plus stretch of time, we had all contact cut off. Before that, before we had the contact cut off, I would start getting these random phone calls from people that knew us both, giving me some broken play-by-play over what my friend was doing. And she was involved in some pretty wild things. But it was just enough information that just enough, wasn't the whole story, was a part of the story, but it was just enough to give you that helpless feeling, you know? It's that same kind of feeling I get when I'm riding the beast at King's Island. You know, when I'm at that first incline right before you go down into the tunnel, and you're like, oh, it was that type of feeling, you know? And come to find out, this friend of mine, she had a serious addiction problem. Serious addiction problem, and, you know, I thought I knew this person. Again, we go way back, as far back as you can go back, you know? And, you know, it was meth, it was coke, it was weed, it was pills, it was alcohol, it was sex, you name it, everything was on the table. They would stay gone for weeks at a time. No one knew where they were. They were running with some roughnecks, some pretty wild characters. And we had to have a conversation. And it was like, you know, I see what you're doing. I hear what you're doing. And I just want you to know that if you're serious about getting some help, I want to help you. I want to be there for you. You know? My friend's response was, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm fine. You have been misinformed. I said, come on, be real. We can talk about this. We can work through this. I'm here to help you. Whatever you need. You know, if you're serious about getting some help, I want to be there for you. No thanks. So one of the hardest decisions that I had to make was to cut off contact. Again, this person was doing some pretty wild things, running with some pretty unsavory characters, and so bringing that stuff into my house as well. And so, you know, I couldn't risk my family. I couldn't risk, you know, that impact that would have on the people that were around me. And so until you're serious, I got to cut it off. I can't do that. Hard decision I had to make. And at the end of the day, I knew that there were only two options for that person. They were either going to die because of their behavior, or they were going to come out of this with a great story to tell. But still, my first reaction was, I got to fix this. I got to swoop in, and I got to save the day. But I knew that wasn't who I wanted to be anymore. I knew that it wasn't up to me to fix these things, and I had to give this up to God. And sometimes when you give things up to God, people will look at you, and they'll look at it as failure. But it's not. It's not. People in my circle that knew me, that knew what was going on, they were like, David, why aren't you doing anything? Why aren't you fixing this? They were used to me doing the feats of strength and being a gladiator in the situation. But again, it wasn't up to me, and I had to give that up to God. Giving things up to God also means that you don't get to set the agenda, which can be hard. I have, for as long as I've been married, I've been wanting to have kids, wanting to have a big family. And, you know, I just had these dreams, and you know, if only I had a son, a mini-me, how cool would that be? Someone I can mold in my own image, oh man. You know, so I had these aspirations of being in the backyard and, you know, playing football with them and teaching them to play baseball. And I played college basketball, so I just had these dreams of being in the backyard and just, you know, having this wicked game of one-on-one. And so when my first son, Mac, was born, man, you would have thought I struck the lottery. You would have thought I had just won the gold medal, man. I was just a proud papa. Yes! All my dreams are being realized. Mac, I don't care if you can't walk. We're going out back and we're throwing the football. Get out. So 2 months before my second son was born, I went to the doctor. Went to the doctor. I said, Doc, not sure what's going on. Got some pain going on my legs. I think this might be a strained muscle. You know, what do you think? He came back. He said, David, you've got arthritis in both hips. What? Wait a minute. Something about me you don't know. I'm only 32. And I'm not supposed to get arthritis. Do you know, I've got one son at home, one on the way, and you're telling me that I've got arthritis. Okay, you're a doctor. What does that mean? Well, David, that means that, you know, unless you want new hips, you have to stop all this high-impact activity. Do you play sports? Man, come on. No running, no jumping, no strenuous activities, and keep the stairs to a minimum. Okay, back up. I don't think you heard me the first time. I am 32. We'll be having two boys, and you're telling me that I've got these limitations now. Yeah. Thanks for playing, Doc. Here's your copay. I'm out of here. So I said, I'm going to beat this. Arthritis is not going to get me down. I'm going to be one of those folks that you see on Dateline who has overcome this obstacle on his own, you know? And so I go to therapy, and I'm doing all my exercises. I'm doing my Pilates, and I'm doing my ab work and everything, and I'm getting stronger. And I'm walking to work, and I'm like, ooh, man, I feel good. No pain? Doctor didn't know what he was talking about. It wasn't arthritis. So I start walking faster, and I start lengthening out my strides. Then all of a sudden, bam, ooh, I get this pain in my hip that just serves as a constant reminder of how dependent on God I am just to take a simple step. God was saying, David, you are not all that. You can't do this by yourself. Here, let me show you. Here's this thorn for you, right? And just when I think I'm getting better, again, I run into myself. I run into my own imperfections. So here I am with two boys now, and I could be that dad who is sitting on the sidelines watching. That is not a part of my plan. That wasn't a part of my plan. So then I get a dose of reality when I look at Paul's response to God and what he says. He says, oh, therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest in me. So I had to give this up to God. I have to open up. So does opening up mean that, you know, I've got to tell the world about all of my weaknesses, which is what I'm doing right now. But, you know what, because that's not how society works. You know, we don't go just broadcasting how weak we are. Try this on for size tomorrow. If you go back to work, to school, wherever you go, try this on. Walk through and tell everybody your weaknesses, okay? Hey, Bob, how you doing? Got arthritis. Good day to you. Hey, Sally, hey, how you doing? I'm a control freak. How you doing? Hey, Judy, I got that rash going on here. I don't really have a rash or anything. So. But the thing you need to know is that weakness before God is not, it's not only acceptable, it's strength. It is strength. And it may sound backwards. You know, you may be scratching your head, but the Bible is full of kind of those backward sounding things that don't really match up to what the world is telling us. Our fearless leader, Brian Tome, once asked this question. He said, what does God do every day? He works! That's my Brian Tome impression. He works! Yes! I will never be up here again. But I had to open up to what God had for me instead of sitting there feeling sorry for myself over what I didn't have. And if we think about that clip that we saw of little Ray, it just puts in my head kind of an expectation that some of us might have who have made that decision to follow Christ or are thinking about that. And it's that we have this false expectation that when we make that decision, that everything is going to be great. Our lives are going to be perfect. We make that decision to follow Christ, and that's just not always the case. You know, when do you most often reach out to God? When do you most often call his name? You know, something's going bad. Little Ray, I need you. Oh, God, if you help me through this, I promise that I will never do this again. Been there. But when things are going great, man, can't touch me. I got this. I don't need anybody. I can do this on my own. See, and for me, one of the hardest things was opening up and letting people in on who I really was. Whether that was God, who already knew, my wife, or even my A-team. Now, my A-team, we have been meeting for about 4 years now, in some variation, couples or just men. Right now, it's just the guys who are getting together. And we get together every Friday morning at the Red Fox downtown. Red Fox. Sausage, egg, and cheese on wheat, scrambled, dry. And every Friday morning, Emma comes in and brings us something that we think is coffee, but we're not quite sure yet, you know. But it wasn't until recently that I really started exposing myself to these guys, you know, that I start really letting them in on the man behind the curtain, so to speak. And as I say that, I'm thinking, it's been 4 years. It's been 4 years we've been getting together. It's been 4 years, week after week after week, celebrating holidays together, birthday parties together, drywall parties together where men really bond, putting up drywall. Yes! And 4 years it took for me to just to let myself go and to take that risk. Why did it take so long? Why did it take so long? I thought this was a safe place. I thought that this A-team was where I should let my guard down, but it turned into, well, if you're not going to share, then I'm not going to share. And, well, I don't want to share that personally because, you know, how's everything going? Well, everything's great in my life. Everything is not great in your life. But I now know that that's a risk that I have to take in order for me to grow and to open up. I don't always get the response that I'm looking for. But I can tell you that time when I put the issue of my friend who had the addiction problem on the table that Friday morning, oh, you can't imagine the weight that was lifted off my shoulders. Left that feeling just, oh man, how could I feel so strong and be so weak at the same time? It doesn't make sense. But in every story and example that I share with you, God has talked to me not in my strength, but in my weakness. And if you're sitting there trying to mask, you know, master your weaknesses in an effort to look like you're strong, but you were totally missing the point. You are totally missing who God is. You know, feats of strength and gladiators might look good on the outside, but it hides the real weak you, and it doesn't get you any closer to God. So what is that for you? I don't know what that is for you. You know what it is. You know what that thorn is. You know what you ask God to take away from you time after time after time after time, and He hasn't taken it away from you yet? You know what that is. Could be some sort of addiction. Could be some sort of anger problem. It could be your control issue over something. But if you listen, He's talking to you right now. I shared with you some of mine, and you might be like, you know, big deal. You got arthritis. You're a control freak. So what? I've got this going on. Well, the so what? The big deal is that God knows you. God knows me. God knows how to get to us. God knows what that thing is that we have, that he knows how to reach us. Loves us for it anyway. But He's looking for that opportunity that you allow Him to show up. And it wasn't until I gave up and opened up that God really showed up. But you got to let Him show up. Because He can do the heavy lifting for you. He can do feats of strength for you. How do I know? Because He said He would. If we look at how Paul kind of wraps up this little piece in his letter, he says, with all of that being said, that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Paul got it. Paul got it. But you've got to answer that question for yourself. Am I willing to give up whatever that thing is that is nudging at you, am I willing to give that up to God? And then am I willing to open up and recognize that I can't do this by myself? That's not the design. That's not how it's supposed to be. And then am I going to let God show up? Because what does God do every day? He works. Stop playing feats of strength. Stop trying to be the hero of the story. And if you give up and you open up and you let God show up, there's a chance that you could gain a stronger weakness as a result of that. Let's pray. God, I love the fact that you punch the clock every day. And how happy you are when we run to you. How happy you are when we are connected. And I just thank you for how you just move in lives day to day. I know that there is someone here who is feeling something, who is feeling a nudge from you right now. And I just pray that you would give them the courage to act on that. Because you are all we need. Just thank you for that gift. And it's in your Son's name that I offer this to you, God. Amen. Well, tune in today to see if Tiger can hold on with that two-stroke lead in the British Open. It'll be a good one. All right, you don't have to go home, but you got to get the heck up out of here. Have a good day.